All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. In today's audio training, I've got John on the phone, and we've got some interesting stuff that he and Brad have been kind of mulling over, and I've kind of jumped into it as well. And where this is really coming from is, you know, we're really seeing a lot of crazy claims out there about insane muscle gain and things like that, and we're trying to come up with a way to actually quantify someone's muscle gain without actually being able to, you know, some of them having, you know, a bod pod or something like that, just using regular household type measurements that are easily accessible to everyone. So I guess, John, let's go ahead and just kind of take this away and talk about that for a little bit. And I don't know, maybe kind of update some people on the progress and kind of just what the overall goal of this is as well.
Right. So as you said, using body weight is probably the worst way to measure changes in muscle mass, because there's so many other factors that influence body weight, and there's other factors that influence body weight to a greater degree and more transiently than any change in muscle mass. So if you gain 2 or 3 pounds of true muscle in a year or even in 2 years, throughout that time, your body weight itself can fluctuate wildly just from either fat mass, water content, food content. Just on a daily basis, it can go up anywhere between 5 to 10 pounds just based on how much you've eaten and how much fluids you've taken in. So how do you, over the course of a year, measure a change as small as 2 or 3 pounds when your daily fluctuations can be as high as 7 or 8 pounds? So it's like the signal is way smaller than the noise. So You never really can tell what's changed. So there's got to be something else. There's got to be something. I guess I'll put the disclaimer: anyone who thinks they can actually gain 20 or 30 pounds in a year, you're just delusional regardless. So like when we're talking about muscle, actual muscle mass changes, we're talking about smaller things than that. So, you know, speaking to real people who actually have their feet on the ground and get this, muscle mass isn't as well, you know, to start off with, the amount of muscle on your body isn't as much as people think. So when we talk about the lean body mass, that's everything that's not muscle. That's everything that's not fat. So that's including bones, blood vessels, the actual blood in the vessels, the food in your stomach, depending on how you measure it, actually gets recorded as lean mass. Intracellular water, extracellular water, everything that's not fat. So that's some studies, or lots of studies, just measure changes in lean body mass. So they're not necessarily representing changes in muscle mass, because your muscle mass is a percentage of your lean body mass. So there's like a big difference there, right? So if you have a change in lean body mass, that doesn't necessarily mean it's your muscle mass changing. And from everything that we've ever seen, muscle grows pretty slowly. So changes in muscle mass take a long time to see. So you're trying to measure a small percentage of your body weight changing, or of your body compartments changing over a long period of time, and the change you're looking at is relatively small compared to how much you can change on a day-to-day basis. So it's very difficult to measure that. So what are better ways of measuring it than body weight? Because body weight just is all over the place. You can't really use, but maybe over time you can use body weight, but even then I just don't think it's that useful of a measurement. So unless you're using steroids and you actually have a 30-pound gain in 3 months, and then it's sort of obvious what's going on. But other than that, for everybody else who's not using drugs, there's got to be something that's more accurate, more robust.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about it. Like from my perspective, most of the things that guys can use to actually measure, you know, body fat percentage or lean mass percentage and things like that, or, you know, things like calipers or even some of these, you know, electronic ones you hold in your hand and it kind of measures through. But I'm not sure if they're the equations that you use on that take into account the actual fat that's in other places other than in your skin, because I don't know. I'm kind of asking you that. I don't know.
So well, it's not that it doesn't take into account. What it doesn't take into account is the compartments of lean mass. Like you can have an increase in lean mass without it being muscle. So, but who cares? Everyone's just after muscle. Like nobody wants to be heavier just because of the sake of being heavier. They just think being heavier correlates to looking better, which correlates to having bigger muscles.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that, okay, so when I went and I got my quote-unquote body fat tested with calipers, it was something like, according to the little formula, it was like 16% or something like this. This is a couple of months ago. And, you know, just kind of subtracting it out, that basically said that my, you know, lean mass was about 100 and it was something like 165 pounds, roughly. That's just what I remember. But now I weigh, like literally this morning I weighed 176.5 pounds, right? My strength levels really haven't changed that much other than, you know, the fact that, you know, kind of got a shoulder tweak. I'm still working around. But, you know, all the other stuff are relatively about the same. But, you know, I've still got, you know, a couple of pounds to lose where I will probably end up being, you know, 170, 173 pounds.
Which makes you like 0.1% or like 2% body fat, which is not right.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So what that's telling me is that, you know, that measurement has a, you know, that equation that was used to determine body fat has some type of flaw in it somewhere. Now well, it's.
They all have built-in error. They all have an error factor. And most of those ones at the gym are messed up. But see, and that's the problem with trying to, when people make percentage claims, like who cares? Like it doesn't matter what the claim is. It matters what you look like.
Right.
So if that thing claims that you're less body fat than you actually are, well, it's not the claim that matters. It matters, like, you know, with your shirt off, do you look good or not? And who cares what the stupid device says? So people get caught up on those numbers, even if they're like, you know, fantastically too low or too high. It's, you know, there's no way, you know, that thing is accurate if it's saying that you, like right now, you said you're barely 10 pounds heavier total than what it says your lean mass is. Like that's basically impossible. So
right.
That's not even, obviously there's something wrong with it. So getting caught up on the numbers, like the smarter way of looking at it is saying, oh, obviously that measurement device is flawed. Ditch the measurement device and just work with something that's more realistic. So that's what we're trying to get to.
Right. So I guess what I was trying to ask you is that, I mean, could it have been possible that I was, you know, holding a pretty significant amount of fat in, you know, in between my organs and all that type of stuff.
Oh, no, it should measure that.
Okay.
Well, but it depends. See, that's the thing. Those devices aren't that useful because their formulas should be calibrated for that, too.
Right. So
there's entire textbooks critiquing these things, right? It's not like this stuff is – I don't think people realize that this stuff isn't cut and dried. Like
right.
I was reading a textbook by Hemsfield and the group of researchers who sort of, this is their thing, body composition measurement. And it's like a 400 page book critiquing all of these styles of measurement and all the inherent flaws. So it's not like this stuff's set in stone. And then once you've had it measured, that's it. Like, you know, there could be a month long debate whether or not that measurement tells you anything.
Right. So basically what we're talking about is, you know, for a lot of these measurement tools, they're not really good for absolutes, but they are pretty good for judging, you know, maybe overall kind of bulk change, I guess you could say, because you can tell a direction for the most part. Like if, let's say with calipers or whatever, you go get tested and, you know, they do it the right way. And then, you know, a month later you come back, you get tested and those numbers have, decreased. You know, that would show that inherently everything you've got is working, even though that number may not be accurate to what your real situation is.
Yeah, relative change is more important than absolute.
Right.
Like it doesn't matter what the absolute number is because they're normally flawed anyway. So, but if you use the same device over and over again, and that same device itself has some precision, so it's the same. It, even though it's measuring you within an error, the error is always the same.
Right.
Then at least you're getting a relative number.
Right.
So that, and that's fine. And that's all anyone's really interested in is relative change anyways. It doesn't, you can just move the decimal place over. It doesn't matter as long as it's always the same device. So In this case, we're trying to come up with a way of, so I guess getting to the point of what we're talking about is a way of measuring muscle mass and changes in muscle mass without being confounded by fat mass or lean mass, other lean mass that's not your muscle.
Right.
And so our new assessment tool, and there's going to be a report all around it, like explaining how it works, is going to be something. And then you and I have been putting our numbers through it, and we're going to put a few other people's numbers through it too. And but we're, you know, we're compiling some data right now, and we think we've got the tool right where it needs to be as far as being able to measure changes in muscle mass. And we're correcting out for fat mass, and we're correcting there's two parts to the tool, and they basically correct for lean mass and fat mass. So by the end of it, we should be able to show true changes in muscle mass without needing to know how much you weigh.
Right. And it's not going to – from what I've seen of this and what we kind of discussed over the last, you know, couple of days, what this is, it's not going to tell you how much muscle mass you have. It's going to tell you whether what you're doing has increased your muscle mass or not, ultimately.
It's useful. Well, it's not going to – it does tell you how much muscle mass you have in a relative – in a relative sense. So in other words, it'll never say how many pounds of muscle are on your body because it's a unitless number, but the number itself will be – it's kind of like an arbitrary index that once you can correlate a look to a number, you'll know, oh, well, that person's muscle index is our project name for it. I'm not sure what we'll call it. But if my muscle index number comes out at 14 – and then you see what I look like, and you're like, oh, okay, that's a muscle index of 14. And then if you see, you know, whatever yours is, and then whatever Pilon's is, and then if we, you know, once we start compiling more and more people, you'll get an idea of what a muscle index number for your body is, because you can just run your own numbers and compare it to me and be like, oh, you know, if maybe you're way more muscular than me and your muscle index comes out at a 17 or something, and then you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So the muscle index is a unitless number. And that's the point. Like, now body weight's incorporated into the measurement, but the amount you weigh is sort of irrelevant to your muscle, to your muscle index. It doesn't actually matter, if you're 30 pounds heavier than the next guy or if your body weight fluctuates based on fat mass, we'll be able to account for that in your muscle index.
Yeah, essentially the way it looks right now is that if whatever you're doing, if your fat mass increases, then your muscle index or whatever it is going to, it's going to be reflected pretty significantly. And the other way around, if it is that your muscle has indeed increased, then it's going to be a pretty significant jump in this index.
So. Yeah, like if you're – because we account for aggregate strength. So I guess we'll just walk through all the parts of it. We're accounting for all of your circumferences. So circumferences meaning the circumference of your arm, like a flexed bicep. So the circumference of your quad at its biggest spot, the circumference of your shoulder, so the shoulder measurement of the Adonis index ratio, circumference of your calf, and circumference of your forearm. So once we've got all those circumferences, we have a good indication of – the muscle mass in that area. And now we're going to take that circumference and divide it by your waist to account for your fat mass. So even though those circumferences can increase, just simply by putting on fat, all of those circumferences will go up. But we know for sure that your waist measurement will go up faster than those circumferences and to a greater percentage. So if I put an inch on my arms and that represents, you know, anywhere between a 6 and 8% increase in my arm circumference, and it's all due to fat mass, my waist, to put an inch on my arm from fat, my waist is going to go up by a much bigger percentage, like more on the lines of a 20% increase. So since we use that as our division factor, that inch increase in my arm, so even though with my shirt on, quote, shirt on big, my arms will look huge, my actual muscle index will drop because my waist is so much bigger. And right. That's the way we account for fat being deposited in all areas of your body. And the same thing with just gaining water bloat, so to speak. And it, because water also diffuses throughout, just by osmosis throughout your whole body. And if you have an increased, other lean mass that's not muscle mass, that's also going to reflect in your waist measurement because, the bulk of your intestine will be there too, right? So if you just have, if you've got heavier and you've got a bunch of food in your stomach, that'll also reflect. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we account for fat mass and lean mass to at least some degree, the other lean mass to some degree, with the circumferences. And then the other half of the equation is your total strength. So we know that cross-sectional area, of your muscles is directly related to the strength of that muscle. Now, it's pretty hard to measure. Now, strength, now this is where it gets a little trickier. Strength itself is exercise specific, rep range specific, and specific to muscle groups. So we're doing an aggregate of a bunch of different strength measurements to get a more robust look at how strong you are overall. And so we're going to be incorporating a bunch of push measurements, strength measurements, so like shoulder pressing, some kind of chest press, whether it's bench press or flat dumbbell press, pulls for your back, so some kind of pull down or chin up, as well as some kind of row, and then lower body strength, so some form of squatting or leg pressing, as well as some form of deadlifting, and then also another measurement for arms specifically, just basically just a standard barbell curl and some kind of tricep French press. And then that, all of those put together, is the aggregate strength measurement. And then once we have that, we've got a pretty good idea of how all of the muscles in your body, how strong they all are, you know, with a bunch of different ways of measuring them. Because any one person might just be really good at one particular exercise, but when we add them all together, we get a better snapshot of how strong you are overall, which is a good indication of your cross-sectional muscle area. And then we normalize them through a formula, so it doesn't matter if you're good at 8 reps or you're good at 5 reps. We're going to normalize it all through a predictive formula, which has, you know, been shown in the literature to be pretty good. And then by the end of that, we know how strong you are versus how big each area is with the cross-sectional areas, with the circumferences. And then that's your muscle index, and we'll be able to tell how much of those measurements is accounted for by muscle mass versus other lean masses or fat mass.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me kind of talking about it. I mean, just kind of going back over, I mean, you're taking all these aggregates of strength. I mean, essentially what you're measuring is basically the total body's almost force potential of the total body. So I don't want to call it real. It's not even like real world strength, but it kind of comes into that because it takes all that into account. But it's almost like a total potential for your body to be able to do some type of work, which is really interesting. Instead of just doing maybe, you know, three, because like you were saying, if you only train in three exercises or whatever, then you know, you're going to be strong in those three. So
yeah, well, that's
going to be interesting,
right? So, like a power lifter would just kill it in the deadlift, squat, and bench press because that's just what they train. But if their total muscle index kind of sucks when you add in like all of the different lifts, that's going to change things, right? So, and it doesn't mean that they're not going to be; they're probably heavily muscled anyways. But having this kind of more robust measurement helps for people who don't do those lifts and don't have like impressive numbers in those lifts. So
it's probably going to look like this. I mean, because what will end up happening is that the total circumferences, if you only focus on three lifts, your total circumference is going to be less than probably somebody else. Like, let's take it just like a steroided up bodybuilder versus a steroided up power lifter, right? I mean, I kind of made this argument in an email that, yeah, you know, kind of overall, a bodybuilder, steroided up, has significantly more muscle mass than a powerlifter, at least from a visual, from what I can tell, right? Just all over.
Yeah, yeah, their goal is for that too, right? They're trying to build more muscle volume anyways.
Right, so that's kind of the difference where, you know, they might weigh the same, you know, and even the force, the actual force strengths might not, the potential might not change that much because some of the things are a little bit lower, like barbell stuff, but where it's really going to come into effect is where the circumference is going to jump across.
Right.
So it's controlled all the way around.
Yeah, we're trying to control for any of those confounding variables, like someone who's really powerful at one exercise but crappy at another, or somebody who has really good levers but like their arms are kind of skinny. But you know, all of that stuff. So nobody should really be able to like cheat the thing because of how many different measurements they're in there. And I also like the idea that, and we toyed around with this by coming up with a unitless measurement. So it's just it's a unitless, it's not like pounds per foot or pounds per inches of, because that's the problem you run into when you get to trying to measure your change with your body weight or trying to measure your change with percent body fat. Now you've added units to it that you that don't actually make any sense because your body weight can change without your muscle changing. And percent body fat can change without your muscle changing. It can't change without lean body mass changing, but it can change without your muscle actually changing. So, right. You know, like Brad's little experiment where he just drank a bunch of water and his body weight goes up and his lean body mass goes up and his body fat percentage drops, but nothing happened to his muscles. So
His body fat dropped, but technically his body fat
His body fat measurable body fat percentage dropped.
Right, but the actual amount of body fat on his body stayed the same.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of water that was gone by the next day. And then the thing is, that was a drastic example of it changing like on purpose for demonstration's purpose. But that's what you're going through every day, depending on how much you eat. Like if you and I go out for something to eat and a drink, we're probably 2-3 pounds heavier. So for the amount of, you know, for the 2 or 3 hours after that meal, we go use one of those bioelectrical impedance scales or body fat calc. We're going to record differently, like based on those measurements and how heavy we are. Things will look different. So we're trying to account for those kind of changes, including the. That's why the strength measurements are in there. Like that, the strength measurement won't change based on what you just ate. So that's kind of why. Whichever deficiency the circumferences have, the strength accounts for, and then whatever deficiency the strength measurements have, the circumferences accounts for.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at with it. And then this way people aren't caught up worrying about how much they weigh or worrying about percentages based on different measurement techniques that aren't necessarily 100%. Like absolute value doesn't really work, so you know, that's why we have a virtual scale here that's not, it's just a unitless scale. So, you mean, all you're going to have is a number and how you look at that number.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's easy. I mean, the error percentage of measuring an inch is virtually nil. I mean, pretty much everybody can nail that down within a 1/16 of an inch or, you know, a 1/10 of a centimeter for the most part, or even 0.5 centimeter. So, I mean, your error, your percent error is going to drop. Same thing with pounds. I mean, unless your scale is just totally off whack, I mean, which, you know, most of them are pretty good nowadays for the most part. I mean, you're gonna be all right. And if you're still using the same things to measure, I mean, you know, really what you're measuring is the change, you know, increase or decrease, you know, over time. So it just makes it easy on everybody. So you'll know by using this kind of index whether, I mean, you won't have to go get your body fat tested. It'll kind of become irrelevant. You'll know. You won't have to do, which even if you're using AI, it's kind of irrelevant anyway. You know where your end up goal is. So
well, it's going to turn out that your muscle, it'll be pretty sensitive. It'll be very sensitive. Like this measurement will be very sensitive to changes in strength and in fat mass. So
yeah, both ways.
You can't really cheat it. Like if you get stronger but fatter, your muscle index isn't going to get too much better.
Right.
And if you get fatter and not stronger at all, it's going to plummet. So it's like a, and but if you are gaining, if you're truly gaining strength and lean mass and no fat mass, your muscle index will shoot up. So it will show it no matter, it'll show what we're actually at trying to see is it, whether or not your muscles are changing.
Right.
And then it kind of throws out the worry about, well, you know, how much do I weigh? Like I know we've had people who've, you know, in the transformation contest who are getting really lean, looking really good, and I still have that psychological block about weighing less. And I'm trying to find a way around that problem that so many guys have. I mean, you and I both went through it where we were just worried about how much we weighed, but we didn't.
Yeah.
We had no other way of measuring. Like we didn't believe that there was another way of measuring. So that's what this is for, is to give guys a new way of measuring.
Yeah, it's funny. We talk about cognitive dissonance, you know, sometimes, and you know, if you don't know what cognitive dissonance is, just Google it. But basically, you know, the big thing about it,
great book about that, cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the number one things we're going to talk about in Adonis 3.0, because we're definitely going to include, you know, a different bonus on a lot of the roadblocks. I don't want to say mental beliefs and roadblocks, and we're not even talking about like foo-foo-y stuff, but talking about like the roadblocks that people are running into based on what they think is common knowledge, based on goals, based on, facing the fact that you personally could be wrong. It's like I said earlier in an earlier podcast, I had the privilege of talking to a gentleman who was used to run up very high in a really big personal training company. These guys ran, probably 150, they were in 150 locations at different clubs. And, we just got talking or whatever, and I just told him, kind of asked him what his secret was to get clients. And he said, the first thing we do is we don't disagree with the client. We basically pretty much agree with them at the very beginning just to get them to like us and be like, yeah, this person thinks like I do. And then once they become a client, we slowly change their beliefs as they move along. So, we don't attack, come out and just attack everything the person was doing. It's almost like, yeah, it sounds like you're on the right track, but with a few tweaks from us, we're going to be able to help you take that even farther. So, come on and jump it with us. And then what they do is, as they move along, so basically the person at the very beginning, this is really screwed up, but at the very beginning, for the first month or two, what the person's really changing for is that personal training company to change their beliefs, which is really, really strange, because they start working with what the person believes and just slowly, surely start introducing new
stuff.
So
if that person believes they need to do HIIT training, the personal trainer is like, yep, that's what you need to do. So they just let the person guide it first.
Yep, they start there.
To make the person believe like they're on the right track and in control. And then the trainer slowly has them
doing it. Weans them off of it.
Right, to the point where, but the whole time the client thinks it was what they believed in.
Right, but if on the other hand, if it didn't work like that, and the trainer was just able to, matter of factly come in, just kind of smack somebody in the head, and say, and because it never works like this, unless the only way it ever works like this is if the trainer's in such high demand, and a person's paying so much money that the trainer just goes, look, this is what you need to do. If you don't do it my way, I'm kicking you out.
Like the people on TV, right? Like in those television shows where the trainer just belittles them and stuff.
Well, yeah, on that show, if you don't do what the trainer says, then you get kicked off the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the same thing. So there's this big fear of loss for not doing what they say. In real life, that doesn't happen very much.
So you got to be a lot more almost covert, but sort of sneaky.
Yeah, it's costing it. What's happening nowadays is that it's costing you a lot of money for your beliefs to change.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, because think about it. What's our biggest thing, the reason we get the most refunds, it would probably account for 90% of our refunds, is the fact that people look at it, they read it, and some of the things that they're kind of used to seeing in kind of popular fitness media aren't there. Some of the other things like nutritional strategies are so simple that people, they just can't believe, they can't wrap their hands around the fact that it can be this way. And so instead of trying it, they're this cognitive dissonance, this whole belief structure, even though we've proven that it can work for people just like them, because it's so strong, they ask for a refund without even trying it.
Yeah, which is messed up, because I don't get that. Why do people buy a workout or something, like a fitness product, and then look at it and decide that it's not useful? Like, if they knew how to build one, why the hell are they buying somebody else's? And then it's almost like they already have an idea of exactly what should be in it. But if you have a predetermined idea of what should be in it, then doesn't that mean you should just be off doing whatever it is you expected to see in that book? Like if you opened up our program and we're like, well, I don't like the sets and rep schemes here, and I think the nutrition should go this way. Well, then just do what you think. Like what? That's what I don't get. Like how do? Like I don't know. I just maybe I'm stupid or naive or something. I don't see why you would buy a diet and then return it because it wasn't the diet you wanted it to be. Then if that's the case, just write your own.
Well, that's why most of the diets out there right now are basically, this is going to blow your mind what I've been thinking about as far as diet is concerned over the last couple of weeks. But that's why most of the diet and fitness information that's out there right now is just essentially regurgitated, because that's what everybody else is saying. So it's basically this parrot mentality, is that I know what works. You know, I know what people are buying. So I'm just going to do and say the same things, regardless of if it's true or not, because there's money changing hands. That's what it's really about.
Yeah, and I think some people want to buy a diet and want to see how complicated it is to prove themselves how hard it is. Like, I think people want to buy diet books, open them up, see how complicated they are, and see, look how hard this is. That's why I can never lose weight. Like, it's almost like each diet book is another excuse why they're the one that can never lose weight.
Sure. So
instead of a solution, you know, instead of a solution like eat, stop, eat, it's like, well, hey, how about you stop eating? Like, instead of the simplest, most implementable, easiest, flexible solution possible, they would rather see 150 rule list of impossibilities to prove, look, that's why it's so hard. Which further supports their dissonance, which if you read up on cognitive dissonance, that's what a lot of people actually are looking for. They want more proof of their position instead of something to show the way out.
Sure. Yeah, it's not a matter. I mean, we already know, we've already discussed the fact that people, a bonding technique that you can use with people is that you absolve people of fault, because people are always looking to shift blame somewhere else. This ego thing, it's, you know, it's not my fault. It's, you know, it's something else. I don't know what it is yet, but there's got to be a reason why I can't get this handled, but it's not my fault. And so a lot of times, and you'll see it all the time in marketing or whatever, they'll say, it's not your fault. It's somebody else's fault. It's the guy who's telling you have to eat, you can only eat once a day, but in reality, you have to eat six times a day. And, you know, yes, it's a little more difficult, but that's why, because you didn't realize how crazy it really is out here. You know, that type of stuff. Or like when people start talking about the real world. Oh man, the real world is crazy. Don't, you know, stay in college as long as you can. You know, it's this big, you know, grass is greener on the other side, you know, type of mentality. But, you know, everybody has this comfort zone they're in as well. And they kind of look to find excuses and reasons to stay within that comfort zone, you know, and to validate why they're still there. So it's like, oh, well, you know what, man, the reason this isn't working for me is because it's too complicated. But you know what? It's not working for anybody else either. You know, this is not true. This is not true.
Well, I'm looking at our little library here of weight loss or nutrition weight loss books. There's entire books written about why you can't lose weight, like The Obesity Myth by Paul Campos. His theory is that, well, don't even bother trying to lose weight because it's not possible. But the guy himself loses like 50 pounds throughout the story of the book. So
right.
I don't even understand that. He's a hypocritical book the whole way through. Same with Rethinking Thin by Gina Colada. She's, you know, she basically gets to the point where it's like, you know, maybe the ideas are, it's this whole like movement to like just accept how big you are because it's too hard to try losing weight. But it's kind of ridiculous, right? So my point is, now there's entire books that, like, literally the point of the book is to feed into the dissonance.
Yeah, to convince you that you're okay.
Yeah, don't bother losing weight. Just read this book about why weight loss is impossible anyways.
Right. So, that's the thing, is that what's happening a lot nowadays, and I was talking to Scott McKay about this. He interviewed me the other day on his podcast. And, you know, one of the things we talked about was the fact that instead of people – because the basic topic of the conversation is why people make things more difficult than they really are. Like, there are a lot of things on the dating side of things and the relationship side that are very simple – techniques and just basic premises and principles, just like same thing with weight loss and muscle building. There's just basic primary drivers that most people just need to focus on those. And, you know, we got talking about the fact that nobody really ever solves the problem that they have. So like for us, like if you think, like, let's say if you think the reason that you're not getting any chicks is because your body is out of whack, well, instead of, and what happens nowadays is that there's kind of one little side of the story, and then there's a big side of the story that's coming out now. And the big side of the story is that everyone is trying to cloak you in psychology and self-help on how you can convince yourself that that problem isn't really a problem, even though every magazine you see on the rack, and I looked the other day in the grocery store, every single magazine in there shows some type of predisposition or focus on body shape. I mean, I'm talking about lifestyle magazine, all the rag mags, all this stuff. So you clearly know, it's in your face, that it matters. But then you've got everybody trying to tell you that it doesn't matter, and here's how you're going to get over this whole situation. You're going to use this psychological technique to do it. Yeah.
Right. So that whole industry, or at least a chunk of that industry, is purely based on feeding the dissonance that, well, we know you're not going to get in shape, but that's okay, because if you just have a slick enough tongue and you say the right things, how you present yourself is irrelevant.
Right.
Which is a complete load of BS.
Sure.
Because and my argument for that is, what if a guy who's in better shape than you just read the same book or took the same course? Then if you're standing next to him in a bar, you're toast, because he's got the same techniques and he looks better than you.
Right. Yeah, all things being equal, that guy kills. And so
right.
but that's the thing, is that, you know, you can it's like I don't know, it's like my buddy Brian, and you met Brian, he's a really cool guy. I mean, he can talk, but literally, I mean, he talks a little bit better than I do. I'm pretty good too, but you know, back in the day, I mean, there was no comparison. I mean, he would do okay with the ladies. I mean, he would never really get shut down, but I was better, and it wasn't because I couldn't talk, and it wasn't because, you know, he couldn't talk. He was better than me at this. He would be the one that got open up a lot of people or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, I looked better. You know, and I'm not trying to – I know this sounds bad, but, you know, you guys know enough by now that we're just trying to kind of say how it is and not really try to cloak it with, you know, other stuff. I mean, this is just the reality. He'll tell you. No doubt about that. And so what's happening nowadays is that people aren't really – like, if somebody in their mind, they say, I have this problem that I need to handle, they're not really going after the problem. They're trying to cloak it in psychology or reasons why they don't even have to worry about the problem. So, like – If somebody has bad credit, instead of going to fix their credit problem, they just go, you know, bad credit's no big deal. I'll just start paying cash for everything. That's my solution. So it doesn't even matter. Or if somebody says, you know what, I need to get in better shape, man. I think people would appreciate me more if I was in better shape. I think my wife would be on me. Instead of doing that and just being like, you know what, this sucks. I'm just going to go get in shape and go ahead and get that problem handled from the ground up. Instead of cloaking it with psychology, because it really never disappears. I don't care how confident you are.
Yeah, that whole, like, just accept me for who I am. It's like, well, no.
Sure.
If there's an issue there, yeah, like, if you're lousy with money, it's not, mm-hmm. well, that's just not who I am. It's fix your problem with money. Like, get a handle on that part.
Yeah, I mean, if you another example is that if you feel like you need to learn how to fight, like if that would help your if you feel like, man, I'm just not very good at confrontation, you know, and I think
you don't mean physical fighting, you mean like engaging in that discussion?
Well, both.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, think about it like this: if you're not good at confrontation at all, because most people there are afraid of confrontation. Part of it's egotistical, you know, their ego, but most of it is like physical fear of somebody beating them up. So if that's kind of what it is, go learn how to fight. Once you learn how to fight, most people have no problem with confrontation and know how to fight. At least the guys I know that know how to fight,
yeah.
They have no problem with any type of confrontation. But instead of going to learn how to like fight and getting that part handled, people try to cloak it in psychology and self-help and all this stuff. So they're not handling the real thing. If you want to know, check this out. And this is a blow your mind. If you ever want to wonder and know for sure what people used to think of you, change, and then you will know. If you think people think you're good now, perfect example. I was at a wedding this past weekend, and you know, I've lost a ton of weight. I guess it shows in my face, and you know, I had on a suit, and we went in, and the guy that I haven't seen this guy in probably a year or whatever, and his wife, they're like, man, they're like, damn, dude, you look good. It's like, you look fit. What have you been doing? I mean, like, first thing they said. I mean, it wasn't like as we were talking. I mean, it was like as soon as we shook hands, like, damn, dude. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, that was a pretty big reaction. What the hell did they think before?
Yeah.
Did they think I was a slob? Did they think this? But you don't worry about it, but you don't really – it's strange, but you don't – if you stay in the same spot, you really never know. So it's almost like in order to really know what people think of you now, you have to change – so that you can reflect back to see what it really was. I know that sounds complicated, but it's really kind of weird, but sounds like that.
You know? Well, yeah, and I mean, that's if there's I mean, that's kind of a bulky thing to do as a test. Like, I don't know if that you want to just
think about it like this. Think about it like this. Like, let's like, say
if you just
like money.
If you just goof on it though, if you just like, I mean, if you have a change you want to make, then by the time you've made the change, like in your case, it's you're gonna people will point out like how much different they're gonna just react differently. But you could also sort of do a mock scenario where you just don't act like how you are.
Mm-hmm.
And people will be like, "Whoa, this isn't how I expect you to be,"
sure.
And they'll kind of reveal how they expected you to be, and then
yeah, it's,
that's kind of when you can decide, like, "Oh, like if someone says that's out of character for you, you're like, oh, really? What was my character?"
Mm-hmm.
But you can like mock that up if you could just act differently, you could kind of induce that sort of reaction out of people.
Yeah, like a couple examples. This is really really funny. First one. Would be like money. Let's say all of a sudden you know we're kind of struggling for a while, and then you get a job and you get a really good job and you're starting to move up the ladder and everything like that. You come home for Thanksgiving and your parents, your grandma, and this is common, that you know, they say, "You know what, congratulations, we were really worried about you for a while there." Really? Yeah, I didn't know that. But seriously, I mean, they'll say that because they were.
And,
but they never would tell you.
And I know this is a bit theoretical the way we're talking about it, but think of it the other way around. Think of people in your life that you've watched change, and think of how your attitude about them. Like we all have everyone around us categorized one way or another, and that's just where they are, and that's how like you kind of sort things out in your head. You're like, okay, that's the, you know, that person's the fun one, but don't want to get any closer to them than just partying. That person is a little conservative, but like easy to be around. And then that person over there is like a loose cannon. I can't handle them more than once a month, or, you know, whatever. Everyone's got a spot. But then when they change, you're like, oh, then, you know, they're not that thing anymore. But usually that's the only time where you'll actually point it out to them, because it feels safe to say it.
Sure. Like this is the best one ever though. So I went home for Thanksgiving one year, and this is back when I used to have a dog. He was a Great Dane Mastiff mix. He was black. He was a big dog. And you know, my grandma comes over or whatever. And you know, what you have to understand is where we come from. It's very, the district is gerrymandered to be, you know, a big African American, district. So it's probably about 60-40, black to white. And it was just funny because I walk in, I've got my dog or whatever. My grandma straight up looks at me without even flinching, and she goes, "I always knew you'd bring home a black baby." I, like, literally, I was like, "What? That is funny," you know. And because, you know, part of my family, like I say, I've got family members that, you know, fly Confederate flags and stuff or whatever. But it was just funny, just hearing that, because nobody ever said that to me. You know, and it wasn't an issue or whatever, but just saying, you're kind of like, oh, dang, okay. And so I know this is kind of maybe off topic of what we were talking about, but, you know, kind of to bring it home, what we're finding, even in the customer forums of the Adonis area, is that a lot of the people who are making significant changes, they're getting a lot more attention from people that they didn't know they were going to get. I told everybody it was going to happen, but it's very different. And the reason that it happened is because, you know, like Jason, for example, he finally let his cognitive dissonance go. He finally just said, all right, cool. And he went, what, a year? He bought our stuff. He went a year without doing anything and finally said, all right, screw it, I'm going to do it. And he took off to the races. It cost him a year worth of time to believe before he took action. And then when he took action, he took big action and won. And I don't know, he might win again because he looks really good. Mm. But think about that. I mean, if you want to equate time to money, and that's how I always look at stuff, you know, what's time to money, because they're essentially equivalent. I mean, that's a year's worth of time, a year's worth of money, essentially, that he just burned based on a belief.
Well, and that's quick. Some people will never change.
Sure.
So, you can look at it two ways, right? Like other people will go years and years and years. I mean, there's other guys in the forum who, you know, are reporting in saying it's been a dozen years of trying different things until they finally come around. I mean, we haven't even been, our stuff hasn't even been around that long, but they've been sort of searching around for that long. And so it's, you know, everyone's got their time frame. Everyone's going to go through their big belief period and all the kind of conventional stuff, and then they'll eventually come around. So,
sure.
And some people won't. Some people never come around, and that's whatever. It's not everyone will be reachable. Okay, perfect example, and I know we're kind of all over the place. We're going to have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. A person I know just died of a heart attack 2 days ago, yesterday, and huge steroid user, but was on for as long as I knew him, and from people who I know said that he wouldn't even cycle off, he would just cycle lower. So that's a lot, right? Now that's from what I've heard, and I know for sure, and I know somebody who was very close to him who has pretty intimate knowledge of all of the other recreational drugs said person was using, and that this person was never gonna believe there was any other way, and unfortunately it seems as though that belief of size wins out overall. Like, you know, you have to be on the kind of aggregate of all the things that this person believed needed to be part of what makes him him, basically ended his life probably 35 years, 40 years too soon. And so even if he was still with us and was, you know, persisted, I don't think drugs would ever not be a part of his life. And I'm not making a judgment call. I'm just saying there's just a cause and an effect. That's all there is.
Sure.
And in this case, it seems, and I'm speculating here, but it seems that it's relatively obvious what the cause and effect of it was. And it was heavy drug use that had something to do with this person's perception of what they should look like. And that's a pretty heavy price to pay, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we can extrapolate just a little bit, just kind of what you're saying, I mean, I'm assuming this guy wasn't trying to be a competitive bodybuilder.
Yeah, well, right? No, he was.
He was?
To some degree, but not that it was making him any money. It was just something on the side.
Okay.
Not a career.
Okay, never mind. No, I was going to go a different direction, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, it's just getting caught up with that look and not being able to let go of it.
Well,
like, that's the big at all costs mentality, which, holy crap. Talk about all costs. Now, I'm not speculating that it was steroids that did it, but it was other recreational drugs, from what I understand, are involved. And, you know, it's sort of when there's smoke, there's fire. Like, who knows? But
sure,
it's just the concept of moving down that more reckless sort of path.
Sure. I mean, but for him, like I say, that his goal, it sounds like to me, was, you know, he was actually competing. And that's cool. I mean, that's where it was for him. But for guys that are their goal isn't competing, and basically their goal is just to maximize the impact they have with their body, like the way people perceive you, I mean, that's a totally different goal.
Yeah. And yeah. I guess that gets back to, okay, so we can wrap this up now. That brings us all the way back to the muscle index, the new tool we're building. Is if your goal is to just improve the look of your body without using drugs, and that improvement of a look is building lean mass and not adding fat mass, and it's really irrelevant how much you weigh. It matters how you look. The muscle index is what I believe, based on what we know of physiology, to be the best way to measure any increases in muscle mass as they pertain to how much better your body looks.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of coming to the conclusion now that basically this, our whole philosophy is for people that are – wanting to make a visual impact, you know, visual first impression, that value and even need their social life to make money, and or, you know, get farther in life, you know, these two things, and can't afford to, you know, waste time on other stuff. I mean, if it's basically those two things, I mean, that's...
Well, it doesn't even need to be about making money. It's just who... It's why everyone starts working out and reading diet books anyways. Nobody does any of that stuff to look worse. They're just, like, we say this all the time, but it's always looking better. So, but nobody, what's looking better? And then that's where the Adonis index comes from. And then, well, then that has to do with muscle mass. Well, how do we measure that? Well, I'm not heavy enough. Well, it's not a matter of being heavy. It's a matter of having more muscle. Well, how do we know that? Well, it's the, and now we arrive at the muscle index.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting, man. Let's just close that out because we're gonna call this one random or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it more or less is about a new way to measure muscle. So I think that's where we'll be with it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. Well, like I say, for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and that is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.